Welcome to Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and explore ways to help students and teachers thrive. Thank you for tuning into this episode, Inside Florida School Boards, Leadership in a Time of Change. Public education is navigating a season of significant change, a pivotal moment that asks us to lead with clarity, collaboration, and care. Florida School Boards Association offers high-quality training and programs that help school boards maximize their leadership and governance while maintaining a focus on student achievement. Today's guest, Andrea Messina, is CEO of Florida School Boards Association. Having started her career as a teacher in Charlotte County, she felt she had something additional to offer and became a school board member, where she served three terms over 12 years. Currently, Andrea holds the position of CEO of Florida School Boards Association, where she has been for over a decade. In this episode, she shares insights into what is happening in public education and with Florida school boards today.
Hey, podcast listeners, it's Jennifer Vine, and I'm so excited to be with you all today. We have a really special guest, Andrea Messina, who is the CEO of the Florida School Boards Association. And Andrea, I want to welcome you to Education Conversations.
Well, thank you for having me, and it is an honor to be here with you and your audience members.
Oh, thank you so much, Andrea. The concern I have is that I usually have an endless amount of questions to ask you. You are just a bevy of just having a pulse on what's happening in the education space, in the public education space across Florida, most specifically, certainly as your role as CEO of Florida School Boards Association. But before we dive into all these great questions, our listeners always want to know kind of the backstory of our guests. And certainly, I think your earlier careers really have fed you and positioned you well for your current role. So my understanding in the intro, you started off as a teacher, and I certainly know you served as a school board member. So can you share a little bit about those promptings and those experiences that really helped get you prepared for what you're doing now?
You bet. And for your audience members, I was one county south of you. So I was in Charlotte County for most of my professional career prior to coming up here. So I was a high school English teacher. And I started off in Punta Gorda at Charlotte High School doing my student internship. My first job was at Port Charlotte High School, where I taught for a few years high school English, mostly seniors, but I also taught 10th grade drama, mass media, student council, whatever, you know, kind of one-off courses they happen to have. And then I also taught at Lemon Bay High School. After that, I stayed home with my children for a few years, ran for the school board, and then I represented the Englewood area on the Charlotte County School Board for three terms, 12 years.
Wow. I mean, that certainly, I'm sure, taught you a lot, but I couldn't help but smile when you were sharing your high school teaching experience, because I think a little bit of those informal trainings of teaching drama and working with community outreach and all of that probably even positioned you better than you anticipated for the things that happen in Florida public education space working with governance. Would you say that's fair?
For sure. And I can honestly say, people always say, well, you know, how did you get to the School Boards Association? And I can assure you, it's not something when I was a kid, I said, hey, I want to work for the School Boards Association, because I never even knew such a thing existed. It's just opportunities kind of presented themselves along the way. And to your point, positioned me with the right kinds of experience, specifically when I was in Charlotte County. Actually, I was chair of the board then when Hurricane Charlie hit.
Oh, gosh.
And
yes.
As you all may remember, and your community might remember, we lost six schools and had to go on double sessions and had to rebuild schools and work with FEMA. So that gave me some very valuable experience. But also, when I was on the school board in Charlotte, I was the gubernatorial appointee to the Southwest Florida Regional Planning Council. And back in the day, there were representatives from all sorts of governments, cities, counties, on the Regional Planning Council. Gosh, I can't even remember, maybe 8, 9 counties, including Sarasota. And we worked with regional areas, large developments, including at the time I was there, with the approval of that Baptist Park.
Oh, yes.
Area.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. You were definitely overseeing a lot of big and important decisions that have had longstanding impacts into the communities around us. So, wow, that's it. Really really interesting. Now, for our listeners, share a little bit about Florida School Boards Association for those of us who may be listening and not really familiar. What is the kind of the corpus of the work, and why is it so relevant to have such an organization in supporting public education?
Well, first off, we are a voluntary membership organization, and I liken us to, for example, the Florida Bar. So attorneys get their professional development through their professional association, the Florida Bar. School board members in Florida have the opportunity to join the Florida School Boards Association, and they'll get mentorship and training and resources and support through us. So our mission is to increase student achievement through the development of school board leaders and advocacy for public education. In truth, I like to say anyone can get elected to the school board. And when they do, it's our job to try to give them the skills, tools, and knowledge they need to be impactful and effective school board members.
That is very helpful. Your comment reminds me so much, because campaigning and governance are two very different skill sets. And oftentimes we have people who will run for a school board, and we often hear because they care about the schools or they care about how the outcomes of the students, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be effective at governance. So how would you distill that, or what advice would you give to any potential school board member that is thinking about running a campaign for the first time?
Sure. Well, first I would say I believe that anyone and everyone who gets elected to the school board really has good intention of having a positive impact on the school district. That being said, there's a disconnect between saying, pick me, I want to be your school board member, and here's what I can do. And then when the person takes the position, gets sworn in and assumes the responsibilities and has the authority, now we go to Florida law. Florida law recognizes the responsibility and authority in the board corporate, which for your Sarasota friends and also for Charlotte and Manatee and most of your listening area, that would be 5 members. So one person cannot unilaterally create some of the changes that they might have thought they could create when they were on the campaign trail. Now they're 1 of 5, which, if you know numbers, is 20%. So you got to get at least 2 other people to agree with you in order to move something forward. So there's a quick learning, and that's one of the roles that we play, is to help them understand the Florida statutes, the roles, responsibilities, delineation between superintendent and board, things like that, so that they can be impactful. But they're going to need at least 2 other people to go with them in order to make change happen.
Yep, that's a great observation and a reality. So what are some of the current challenges and opportunities you're seeing right now as you're supporting school boards and the members across the state?
Well, as you know, there is currently, not just in Florida, but across the nation, there's shifts in population. If you're looking at any of the demographics over the last few years, you'll recognize that birth rates are down. And that's not just in Florida. It's not just in the United States. It's worldwide. So the numbers of students are going down. And then in Florida, we have some robust choice options. So there's some movement of students. In some cases, it's into and out of and back to public schools. Right. But in other cases, it's to other forms of education that could be homeschool, could be charter school, could be voucher schools. So there's a whole lot of change right now. And communities have a hard time understanding. Florida's funding mechanisms are very complex and detailed. So it's not like an easy explanation about where money goes and fundings and things like that. There's a lot of change in public education. And, quite frankly, the attention that public education is kind of getting is a really good thing. These are public schools, which means they belong to the public. So when we have parents and community members who have increased interest and scrutiny of the public schools, that's only a good thing. We welcome them in.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And then when you look at kind of the challenges that they're facing, where do you see kind of the delineation from the authority that the local school boards have versus what maybe the state legislature or maybe even potentially the Department of Education under governor has that they really don't have control over?
Well, actually, that's one of those things that someone who's on the campaign trail comes to realize pretty quickly once they become a school board member, and that is that the Florida legislature has a lot of parameters over which they control related to public education in the state, and the federal, not quite as much, but still some. And so anything that a local district wants to do or wants to some agenda item move forward, whatever it might be, it has to be in compliance with both state and federal law. Right. And there's not a whole lot of extra space to have some, you know, additions to what are the requirements by the federal law and the state law. And of course, every year, the legislature gets a ton of bills related to education. We're not yet sure which ones are going to pass, but we certainly know some. The book that's sitting right here on my bookshelf that says Florida School Law has grown by about 3/4 of an inch or more in the past few years. More and more laws are being made by the state. And of course, your Department of Education also creates some rules that districts have to follow. So districts have to follow federal law, state board rules, and board policy.
Right. I think it was last session when the state legislature enacted school board term limits.
Actually, it was 2 sessions ago.
Okay.
The term limits were 12 years, which right. were 3 terms, and then it got changed to 8 years, which is 2 terms. And even this session, there was the conversation about putting it into a constitutional amendment as opposed to statutory, and the proposal at that time was 12. So right now, the current imposed term limit is 8 years, statutory term limit, yep. which means it could still change. All it takes is a bill to pass. Versus if it was constitutional,
right.
then the citizens would have to vote on it.
Right.
But it started in 2022. So anyone who got elected in 2022 is up on the ballot again in 2026 for their first re-election. And then if they get elected in 2026, re-elected, that would be their second and final term, unless term limits change again.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And so what kind of effects are you seeing, both positive and maybe some potential unintended consequences from enacting those term limits?
Not all board members are opposed to term limits, let me be clear. Mm-hmm. But many of them believe 3 terms rather than 2 terms would be the ideal. They recognize that the school district and all of these other things that we've been discussing, federal, state laws, all of this, it takes a little while after you get elected to really know and understand all those things. And we haven't even discussed the state funding formula or any of the other, you know, really specific things that are associated with public education in Florida. Many board members will say, it took me 2 years before I even felt like my feet were underneath me.
Yes.
And then now I have to start running for re-election. So we're seeing board members, first off, we're going to have to get them up to speed quicker and faster. Mm-hmm. And we want to position school board members to be able to have an immediate impact. They don't have the learning time that previous board members had when we didn't have term limits. In Tallahassee, where we have term limits up here for our legislators and cabinet members and people like that, there's an argument, not saying I agree or disagree, but there's an argument that when you impose term limits, it empowers staff rather than the elected official. So I have heard that argument. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some smaller communities, especially across the country, we hear from small communities in some states that can't even get people on the ballot to run for school board. Now, we're not at that point yet. We certainly have all of our seats filled, and I've never seen an election where any seat hasn't had candidates. But in some of our much smaller districts, we could face that. Whereas now or before term limits, you might have somebody who was really committed and wanted to stick around for a while, and the community wants them to stick around. So they could have been around more than 2 terms. So some people argue that the citizens should choose, and if they want to keep somebody, they ought to be able to. Some people argue that if they're going to have term limits for school board, they should have term limits for city council, county commission, and other local constitutional elected persons like your sheriff, your tax collector, your, you know, property appraiser, your election supervisor. So there's all sorts of arguments all over the board. Also, the fact that it can bring new ideas to the board. I mean, the more change we have, the more people can serve over time and more new ideas come to the plate.
Well, and speaking of like new ideas, I know you just recently held your five, like the different regional meetings, almost like listening sessions, if you will, across the state. And so I'd be curious to know, what did you learn and what are the things that are top of mind for that you discovered during those listening sessions?
Yeah. For your listeners, we have the state kind of divided into five regions, and then we call it FSBA Coming Your Way. We go to each of the regions to have these regional member meetings, and they're voluntary, just like everything else that we do. We have school board members who have other full-time jobs, and they can't spend all day, every day focusing on school board governance. So one of the reasons we do these regional meetings is so that they can, in advance, just take one afternoon off and still get some professional development and some networking with their peers. We were talking a lot about governance, and really the board spending most of its time talking about student achievement and student learning, and shared research with our members that clearly demonstrates a direct correlation between the work of the board and student achievement. As long as the board positively is talking about student learning, creates the conditions for success of student learning, professional development, for example, as long as data is used to set some goals and they communicate honestly and transparently with parents and community, board members can have a positive direct effect on student learning. It's also true that the less they do those things, they could have a negative impact on student learning. So we have a lot of conversation about where are boards spending their time and are they doing the things that research says will positively impact student learning.
And are you finding that the majority of them right now, with the sea of changes, they feel like they're able to stay on point, or are there other things that are impeding that?
Well, we gave them a little sort of quiz of sorts and asked them to kind of rate their own board in indicators towards these things. And most boards, everyone had some areas that they felt like they wanted to go back to their board and talk about and really see if they couldn't spend more time focusing on more of the right things. I think they all recognize they do some of that work, but I think many of them recognize sometimes they get distracted by other things.
Yeah, for sure. And in light of all the changes that are happening kind of out there, do you feel like governance, the actual role of governance has changed? And if so, how? And if not, why not?
Well, the law has not changed on governance. So the actual reality of roles and responsibilities, the space where boards can make a difference, which is policy, and the superintendent, which is the management and day-to-day operations, that part has not changed. What has changed is, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, the interest in some of those day-to-day operations have increased. And that's where board members then start spending some time. If the focus was on the policy that managed the day-to-day operations, there could be sort of, it's through policies that boards leave their lasting legacy.
Right.
I always tell board members, you know, they say, well, in our district, we do X, Y, Z. And I say, is it in policy? Because if it's not in policy, it's just a good idea. Mm-hmm. And when the people sitting in the seats are gone, that practice may disappear. So if there's something that the district should be doing or not be doing, you know, I liken policy to the bumpers when you go bowling with young kids. You know how they have those little bumpers?
Sometimes I still need those, right? Even now as an adult.
Well, when you go bowling, the strategic plan or the goals, those are the pins you want to knock down.
Right.
And so when you throw the ball, the superintendent, I liken to, and staff to the ball, as long as they stay within the parameters, the bumpers, and still knock down the pins, that's the goal. And so the bumpers being the policy, as long as the staff and superintendent stay within the policy, the goal is to knock down the pins, which is to achieve the strategic goal. So policy is really where boards should be spending most of their time.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. You alluded early in the conversation that they have a little room of navigation of creativity. I can't recall your exact words. And I am curious to get your perspective as we are in these midst of changes. We see some school districts, even our school district, I think our superintendent is definitely leading with a very future-focused way and becoming much more explicit in being competitive, sharing kind of the way, elevating the school student outcomes and the performance of the schools. I'm just curious, like, are you seeing other kind of tactics across the state that you find are very illuminating and we need to see more of that courageous leadership, if you will? Or would you say, and this, I don't mean to pin you into like an either or, but is there also a risk, maybe I'll reframe it, a risk that we're maybe trying to take on too much change too fast?
There was a district last year that started having conversations about moving to a 4-day work week. Okay. And they were thinking, oh, this is great. They started having community conversations. They were going to make some real changes and they really felt that it was important. And then leadership from the state sent the message, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to have students in school 5 days a week. So sometimes some changes aren't necessarily accepted by everyone or up the chain, if you will. But I will say I'm seeing, you know, certainly this is when we talked about term limits and new ideas, more board members, especially more board members who might be younger and with children coming to board meetings and saying, hey, have we tried this? Have we tried that? What I think is one of the biggest challenges to really being creative and implementing some innovative ideas is the overwhelming nature of all the fires that get put out on any given day and consume the attention of staff.
That is very fair.
If you're familiar with Stephen Covey's sort of time matrix, there's a lot of time being spent on immediate things that you have to get done right now with a big deadline. And there's not enough time or space for the mental exercise of visioning and just kind of ideation and dreaming and doing things that are not urgent, because the urgent takes over the day.
Yes, I think that is a very fair assessment, but I think you're raising a very fair concern and acknowledgement of the challenges that they do face on a daily basis, no doubt.
But I also think parents should not be shy about saying, we want changes, and here are some of the things that we want, because it's a market.
And, yes.
And when the market says we need change, change can occur.
You're exactly right. Leaning on the conditions of success, and I would think that one of those conditions is also having a strong superintendent. One of the other roles that you also do is you often lead superintendent searches. So I'm curious, just to get for our listeners to understand, what are you seeing in today's world in this challenging environment? Number one, kind of the role of the superintendent, how long are they staying in the position? Are they at an elevated place of being able to succeed? But we are seeing, like again, Superintendent Connor has really risen above and kind of struck a pretty good chord. So what are you seeing in terms of what skill sets superintendents for today need to have in order to lead for tomorrow?
Yeah, well, first, let me remind your listeners that in Florida, someone can be a superintendent either by appointment, which is what you do there in Sarasota County, but also by election. And we have more elected superintendents than we do appointed in our state. There are only two states in the nation that have any elected superintendents. That's Florida and Alabama. So that adds a little context to how long are they staying.
For sure.
But I'm going to answer your question with the filter of for appointed superintendents, okay? Because that's what you have, and I think that's what your listeners are most familiar with. Most appointed superintendents get that position through some very public selection process. public interviews, applications, a real filter with a lot of scrutiny and a lot of public attention. Because of that, that lends itself, and especially in Florida, because of our public records, in some states, names don't come out until they're finalists for the job, but in Florida, names come out as soon as they apply for a job. So it's a lot of public scrutiny. So even people who might be absolutely well-trained and have all the experiences to be a good superintendent, there are some people who just don't want that level of public exposure and scrutiny just because they're more private people. So that gives us a little bit of a smaller pool from which to choose in Florida than some other states may have access to. That said, what we're finding is boards at least having the conversation that maybe the superintendent doesn't have to have been a teacher or a principal. Now, that's what the board has conversations about. As soon as we start having conversations with the community that the board has asked us to have, the community most times reinforces they do want a superintendent that has been a teacher or a principal or both. So boards have some open willingness to look at some other candidates, and we've even seen some other candidates apply, but in the end, it's typically going to be somebody who has some education background and experience. But I tell boards, Superman and Superwoman do not exist. To have every experience and been successful in everything they've done, but it doesn't exist. So it's not just about a superintendent. It's about the team that the superintendent can build around them.
That's right. So it really is the organizational leadership skills certainly come into play on that. So thank you for answering that question. So I know we're running out of time, and I'm just a poke back at the school board members. Do you think we're attracting the best people right now to run?
I don't even know whose names are coming up right now, but I hope so. I mean, I hope that the desire and interest in public education in Florida can be enough of a motivator to get the right people to run and want to serve their communities.
Yeah, it's definitely. And what would you say to someone that is thinking about launching into this? What one piece of advice would you give them?
Start attending school board meetings and see what's going on.
Yeah. So true. School board meetings that sometimes are short and very efficient, and other times we have lots of public comments, and it can be very illuminating for sure. Well, Andrea,
it's not just a formal meeting. It could also be workshops.
Yes.
Well,
the workshops I find are incredibly informative for sure. So that's super advice. Andrea, was there anything that we did not cover today that you think our listeners need to know about?
Well, I think they need to know that the education foundations across the state are poised to support and position themselves as public education, as well as other education and community advocates, and our public schools rely on the support from the community. And so we just really appreciate the partnerships.
Oh, we do as well. And if our listeners wanted to learn more about just the operations and what you all do at Florida School Boards Association, where would they find more information?
They could go to fsba.org.
Oh, that's so easy. Ours is not quite so easy, listeners, but you've probably heard me say this 1,000 times over, though, for those of you who listen a lot. If you want to learn more about the Education Foundation, you can certainly check us out at edfoundationsrq.org. So, Andrea, I just thank you so much for your knowledge, your insight, your partnership. You always know how to just lay it out there for the everyday person to understand the operations. And I thank you so much for being a part of our podcast today.
Well, thanks for having me, and I certainly hope to see you again real soon.
I do too. And for all of our listeners, thank you again for tuning in to our podcast, and we hope to see you on the next Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off.